In a world of Democrats,
there will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
And Republicans,
I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system.
You need a voice of liberty. Look no further. You found it. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome to the Tom Woods Show, episode 312. Well, I'm back from the Christmas hiatus and ready to go here in 2015. And today, I'm joined once again by Connor Boyack, whom we just spoke to not too long ago, but we're talking to him today about a totally different subject. Connor has written yet another book in his children's book series, this one, The Tuttle Twins and the Miraculous Pencil. And this raises a lot of issues, I mean, economic issues, educational issues, lots of interesting things to talk about with Connor, who is president of the Libertas Institute in Utah and is the author of numerous books. We'll link to a couple of them at tomwoods.com/312. Connor, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tom. It's always great being with you.
You were guest number, well, you were on episode number 300, and now you are my first guest as I come back in 2015, and that's because you've written another book. You had two books come out, one right after the other. You remind me of me, like back in 2005. I think I wrote three books that year. So you had one come out in December. We talked about that, episode 300, tomwoods.com/300. That was Feardom, which I wrote the foreword for that book. And today we're talking about another entry in your brilliant and extremely necessary Tuttle Twins series for children. And I want to make sure that people listening don't turn this off because it's about and for children. The themes, of course, are timeless, and the importance of educating children is important to all of us. Tell us about The Tuttle Twins and the Miraculous Pencil, the second entry in your Tuttle Twins children's book series.
I'm glad, Tom, that you made that distinction, because we've actually been a little sneaky in how we're educating adults while we're educating kids.
And that's that. Right. Yeah.
It's been a little bit sneaky, but it's been very effective. So this is the second book. You know, you had me on your show. We talked about the first, the Tuttle Twins, and the law. And that was based on Bastiat's book, The Law. And that has been so well received that we have a series plan, but that was our trial book. We wanted to see, you know, is there a market for this? Is there going to be good reception of it? Is it going to get spread by word of mouth? Are people going to recommend it to others? That book has done so, so well. In fact, I thought it would spread mostly through libertarian circles, you know, people who've read The Law, they want to expose their children to these same ideas. It's actually spread mostly through homeschoolers more than any other group that we've seen. You think about these homeschooling moms who have their mommy blogs, and they go blog about it, and 30 people buy the book for their kids. And so the first book did really well.
Wait, before you go on, did I read this correctly, or did I dream this, that you've had at least one foreign language translation of that book?
So we've translated that into Spanish. We have Swedish coming out soon. We have, I met a French libertarian who really wants to translate into French, which, of course, is the original language
right.
of Bastiat's book. And so that book has had the greatest reception, which leads us to want to do translations because, you know, there's a market for it.
Yeah,
so we'll
right.
definitely cater to that. So that's been great. The second book, it's hard. We have about 8 to 10 books planned total in the series. And for those who haven't yet familiarized themselves with what we're doing, it's called The Tuttle Twins, tuttletwins.com. And the Tuttle Twins are two characters, Ethan and Emily, and they learn about liberty through, you know, we do a fun story so the kids are engaged. I've got an illustrator, Elijah Stanfield, liberty-minded guy who is just phenomenal. We get so many compliments on the quality of the art that he's done for our books.
It is great. So, I can testify to that. It is such a beautifully done book. It is not in any way amateurish. It looks like a children's book. It does not look like, well, some guy had a libertarian idea and he scribbled some images. It is a beautiful book.
And Elijah will appreciate that. He really does good work. And so what we're trying to do is bring the principles and concepts of liberty to a younger generation. This started out with myself being the father of two young kids. a couple years ago, looking online, trying to find materials that I could use to expose them to liberty and Austrian economics or what have you, and not finding, not only not very much, but nothing. You know, there was a little bit about, hey, kids, here's what the Constitution is, or here's American history, but there was nothing, the core concepts of liberty. And so being an enterprising guy, I said, let's fill that market void. So we did the first law book. The second one is based on iPencil by Leonard Reeve. Fantastic brief essay for those who aren't familiar with it about how the free market works, how spontaneous order facilitates the production of goods. He uses the pencil, of course, to show that here's this simple object. We all take it for granted. It's just a common pencil, and yet no single individual knows how to make it. It requires the combined labor and ingenuity and cooperation of countless people who may not even share the same language or religion or continent, all to come together to work on a single pencil. Fantastic essay. You can find it at fee.org, F-E-E.org. Just Google it online. It's great, and it helps adults understand how an economy should and actually does, despite government interference, function. So we wanted to take the same concept, take it down to the kids, because, you know, kids are entitled, especially in our culture. I mean, I spent a few weeks in Africa a few years ago, and you kind of get immersed in that environment, and then you come back, and your eyes are open, and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, like, not only do adults have the problem, kids have these problems. They're entitled. You know, my kids, they don't eat a meal that I slave over cooking, or my wife slaves over cooking. And we sit down and we try and help them understand, you know, we spent money on this. Dad has to work to earn this money. You know, kids around the world don't have, you know, this wonderful food, and you have it. You shouldn't take it for granted. And so we wanted material that would bring the concepts of iPencil to kids and help them understand the shirt they're wearing, the backpack they carry, the book they read, whatever it is, requires so many people coming together, requires so such elaborate processes. As we did our little beta testing for the story as we were developing the book, it was fascinating to hear with some of the little focus groups we did, the conversations that were coming out between parents and children, where children were really understanding and no longer taking for granted, at least as often, the toys that they had and the things that they did, because it was fascinating to them that these things even existed. Of course, the story is based on the pencil itself, but it's applying to anything. And so we wanted the second, first book was about basically proper role of government, Bastiat's the law. In the second one, we want to talk more economics and market and bring these same ideas to kids. And so, yeah, the book is available at TuttleTwins.com. Doing fantastically. We're so excited because we want to do about 8 to 10 books in the series. And the momentum is there. It's been performing, selling very well, and that's very encouraging to us.
Well, I'm glad you put it that way, because what we're trying to recapture in children with this book is not just the idea of liberty, which they're probably learning about for the first time, but the idea of wonder, that children would have an attitude of wonder instead of entitlement. And it's hard these days, especially when little miracles are performed all the time by all these gadgets we have that amaze you and me, because you know, we grew up in a regular world, and now suddenly, as Jeff Tucker would say, we're in a Jetsons world. And I don't know what happened between then and now, but suddenly I'm amazed. Every day there's at least one new thing that I can do that blows me away. And I don't want my kids to grow up, as you put it, with an entitled attitude. Like, I'm entitled to have a watch that can tell me how old Ian Anderson is, you know, by asking it verbally. You know, I don't want them to have that. I want them to grow up saying, it is astonishing that this is possible, and it, both technologically and from the point of view of the division of labor. It's amazing that any device, even of 1/1000th the simplicity, is possible because of all the different steps that you need to go through. Now, with iPencil, the point that Leonard Reed was making is that it's not enough to say, well, all you need is some wood and some graphite and, you know, some rubber, whatever. It's that each one of these things, as you note in the book, has its own family tree, we might say, that goes into producing it. So the way Milton Friedman popularized the essay was to say, when you go to get the wood, you realize you've got to chop down the wood with something, and to chop it down, you're going to need a saw, and for the saw, you're going to need to engage in iron ore. You know, you have to mine the iron and all this stuff. You got to produce steel. You need rubber for the tires. It's going to transport the steel. And you realize that there are so many people in so many processes, and they don't even know that they're involved ultimately in the production of a pencil. And not one of them could encompass in his brain all these technological processes. This is something that should fill all of us with wonder. And I think children in particular ought to have that natural attitude of wonder. This should resonate with them. And I will say before I stop talking here that I read this book of yours to my daughter Amy just the other day. And as soon as we got done reading it, she turned to me and said, "That's exactly how you explained it to me," because I had forgotten I had told her this whole story when she was younger, and she had remembered it, and it rang a bell when I said this, I explained it to her. Let me ask you, though, how do you – okay, it's good that the children have the attitude of wonder. Maybe we don't have to explain to them at age 7 why, therefore, central planning doesn't work.
Right.
I mean, what is your ambition with this book? I mean, are we trying to get them – push them in that direction, or at this point, are we satisfied that they understand how interconnected the world is?
I think more than anything, what we're striving for is to facilitate conversations that aren't happening. Like, you know, your listener, Tom Woods, of course they're going to be getting fed these types of, you know, lessons and concepts as they're growing up. But in 95% of families, that's not happening, whether they're liberty-minded, you know, homeschoolers, unschoolers, or if they're sincere parents who do put their kids in public school, and they're definitely not getting it there. So the kids aren't getting exposed to these ideas. We want to supplement parents who perhaps on their own initiative are bringing these concepts up, but more likely than not, that's not happening. And so what we were really intrigued by, it was almost an unintended consequence of our first book. We did not plan this, that we wrote a children's book. We wanted to teach the concepts of Bastiat's The Law to children. And so we put the book out there, very well received. We get all this feedback. And what we found, it was not our intention, was that adults were learning along the way, right? It's kind of this sly, subtle thing, which for us has now become intentional with the second and then future books, in that a child would be sitting with a parent. Perhaps they're too young to read themselves. Perhaps, you know, the parent is just having some family time reading along with the child. And the child is reading the concepts in Bastiat's The Law, but in our little children's version, children's story. And they get done and they say, "Well, if, Mom, if plunder is bad, then why are taxes okay?" You know? And they start asking these very raw, fundamental, tantalizing questions that parents haven't even considered. And so at the end of the book, what we say is, hey, you know, parents, this was for your children. Here's where you can go read the original version of Bastiat's The Law. Here's where you can, you know, get a study guide. Here's some suggested questions that you can have. Same thing that we're doing at the end of the pencil book for parents, leading the adults to the original sources, the original stories or essays upon which our books are based, providing them with questions. We have activity workbooks. So the child gets done reading our Tuttle Twins and the Miraculous Pencil, and the parents can go get a 21-page activity workbook so that they're doing crossword puzzles and word searches and mazes and service projects and study group discussion questions, reinforcing these concepts for the kids. Because, again, all we're trying to do is drive discussion. Myself as a parent, I don't want to sit down with my 5-year-old and inculcate the raw ideas of Austrian economics. I want to give them a conceptual foundation so that as we have informal conversations in the years ahead, where there's a current event that happens, or whether, you know, some economic change in our own family circumstances, as we have just informal discussion in the years ahead, they have a foundational reference point, right? So that they can go back and understand all these things that are happening because they've been given the basic narrative or story or concept that we can point them back to. And if we don't give them that foundation, they're not getting it in public school. Many homeschooling parents don't understand it themselves and therefore can't give that to their children. We just want that foundation to be there. We want these ideas to be in the back of their mind, just like with your daughter, where you say that, oh, yeah, she remembered the story and we could discuss it again. If I'm discussing with my children, you know, about how this new iPad that we bought, I can now reference the story and say, hey, let's think of the family tree of this iPad. And suddenly it's not just this new object that they get and they can play their games, but I can infuse the discussion with an appreciation for where this actually came from. And they can begin to benefit the free market and freedom and spontaneous order and the wonder of all these people who are working together. we just want to be able to allow parents to point back to the ideas, and no material out there, no educational material that I've encountered after an active search is providing this to children, is providing this to parents. And so for us, it's a pretty ambitious project. We're very careful with how we're doing it, recognizing the implications of what we're doing and how important it is for a lot of the families that have been buying it. But over time, we hope to end up with somewhere in the ballpark of 8 to 10 books. They won't all be based on another work like Bastiat's The Law or Leonard Reed's I Pencil. You know, we might do one on the non-aggression principle. So think of a bully at a playground, right? That it's okay to defend yourself, it's not okay to be the aggressor, and have a story wrapped around that. Some of that may just be a concept standing apart from any literary work that we're using. So we haven't, you know, solidified the plan of books going forward, but we have a lot of ideas. We get a lot of feedback from parents who've maybe read a book that they like, or, you know, they try to explain to their five-year-old. I always laugh with people that the epic final book in our series, if I can pull it off, will be Human Action.
The children's book.
Right. I don't imagine that's possible at all, but, you know, we'll consider that a success if we're at all able to pull that off.
Well, you know, two things occur to me as you're talking. The first is, up until recently, when people would say, well, you know, what, I know there are things that, like the Uncle Eric books that maybe my early teenagers can read, and I know there are books that as you get older you can read, but, you know, what's something that at least can be suggestive in terms of liberty ideas to kids who are younger than this? And pretty much the answer I've had to give them up to now is, I don't know, nothing. Like, I can't think of anything. And this series is filling that gap. And I knew it was only a matter of time, because I thought to myself, this movement is being populated more and more all the time. We have more and more people interested in it all the time. There's no way this gap is going to persist. And then, of course, simultaneously with this Ron Paul homeschool program has gotten started, and that's a K-12 program. And again, this is something that engages the kids, even at a young level, with really, really interesting and important ideas. And the second thing I was thinking of is that in both cases, both your project and the one that I'm working on with the Ron Paul homeschool, they also work for parents, that parents can learn simultaneously with the children. And yep. It's not to say that the parents are stupid. It's not to say the parents don't have knowledge. That the parents themselves know, as I myself know, that I would have given my right arm to have the kind of educational opportunities that our kids have today thanks to these types of resources. And now parents who say, oh, isn't it a shame that I didn't get this kind of education? Well, they can get it too. They can listen to these audio files in their car. They can sit down and discuss these books with their children. They can go and read the originals. I mean, you've made it easy. I'm trying to make it easy for everybody to be as knowledgeable as possible so that we can be formidable debate opponents and push this conversation forward in the whole country.
Well, what I love most, I mean, I've written 4 books for adults, general market, whatever. I've done 2 now for kids. And it's really interesting writing a children's book. It actually takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
I mean, the story itself isn't long, but it's kind of a mixed thing, right? Where these ideas themselves are not difficult. They're not complex. A child can understand, right? The non-aggression principle, don't hurt other people. Don't take their things, right? Every child is told that by their parents. The hard part is helping seed the story with enough application to the real world that it makes it relevant, right? So if we just have a story about don't hurt people and things, every parent's going to agree, every kid's going to agree, they're going to walk away thinking, well, yeah, we teach that to every kid, big deal. But if we throw in just a couple subtle stories to help them see how that applies to the government, how that applies to politics, how it applies to relations with your neighbors or people in another country, then we start forcing or rather encouraging conversations that didn't exist. And it's been fascinating for us to get some of the feedback where kids, I mean, these kids, they're taught these concepts foundationally. It's not that this is not new information to them. What we have to help children and then, of course, even the parents understand is that all the exceptions that society layers onto those fundamental core truths of don't hurt people, don't steal their things, are not, in fact, exceptions. They are, you know, justifications for things that should not be done. And so we try and introduce these ideas to these kids or to their parents, but then help them see that these are enduring truths. These are things that apply not just to your four-year-old that shouldn't be hitting their sibling. It applies to you as well. It applies to the police officer. It applies, you know, to the government. And so we're not overt in it. We're not trying to come off in these books as too, you know, preachy, or especially preaching to a libertarian choir, because most of our customers are not libertarian. They are the average person who buys a Tuttle Twins book, we're finding, is a independent-minded homeschool mom who is more often than not conservative, but they don't really understand freedom. They don't understand what liberty is. They don't really get any of these ideas. And so, as you said earlier, they themselves are being educated along the way. The fun thing for us is our book is targeted between 5 and 10 years of age. But because of Elijah's illustrations, we're getting 3 and 4 year olds who are sitting there and they like seeing, oh, there's the butterfly and there's the, you know, cat or whatever. And they like the drawings. And so they're getting sucked into these stories. And then we're even getting 11, 12, even up to 14 and 15 year olds who are reading our books and liking them. Not because they feel like they should be reading a children's book. It's beneath them age-wise. But they've never heard these ideas anywhere else. None of the books they've been assigned or provided by their parents have introduced these concepts to them. And so they're intrigued by the story. So it's a careful line that we have to do when we're developing these books, recognizing that we have a target audience, but the benefit is running the gamut in terms of age, the parents as well. So yeah, it is easy to dismiss this as, oh, you're just going after the young children. But the effect that we're seeing is much more widespread than that. And so it's very encouraging to us, as I say, where there was a market void before this. You know, there were, as you know, with the Uncle Eric books and stuff, there's some resources for teenagers, but there's been such a void for so long, and especially as homeschooling is just exploding. We want to be able to satisfy that demand and really create a stronger foundation for a even much larger liberty movement, you know, in 5, 10, 20 years from now.
Well, the book we've been talking about today is The Tuttle Twins and the Miraculous Pencil. TuttleTwins.com is the headquarters for these books. Connor, I'd like to ask what the next one is going to be or what your timetable is for 2015, but I don't want to impose any external deadlines or anything on you, put more pressure on you than already exists, except just to say thank you for the work that you've done already.
Well, I appreciate that, Tom. We're probably going to do, we did two books in 2014. This book came out just the second week of December. So we'll probably do one book in the summer or fall of 2015, and then another book early 2016 and late 2016. We haven't decided what the next one will be. We're kind of letting the market decide. So if any of your listeners have read the first book or got the second book, if you have an idea, any of you listeners, please let us know. There's a contact form at TuttleTwins.com. We're really trying to satisfy the demand of parents out there. And so we've got some ideas. I'd love to do a book on homeschooling, modeled after some of the work of John Taylor Gatto about the true history of the American education system. Maybe, you know, the kids go to Sudbury School and they see what unschooling, what freedom looks like in terms of education. Maybe they have friends or a cousin there and they can see that these kids can do whatever they want and they're learning all these fun things and they don't have to sit in a boring classroom. So we might do an education book like that. I want to do a Creature from Jekyll Island for kids, talk about monetary policy and some of this stuff. We've got a lot of ideas, but we haven't yet decided the third. If anyone has ideas out there, we'd love to hear them. But we are going to get going probably in the next few weeks or month or two and starting to solidify which book and then developing the plot. So time's of the essence. If anyone has ideas, we would love to hear them.
All right, everybody, remember that the show notes page for this episode will be tomwoods.com/312. We'll link to both the Tuttle Twins titles as well as Feardom, Connor's book from a month ago. I mean, if that's your most recent Connor Boyack book, you're behind the times here. Right? We've already moved on here. We're talking about pencils. Connor, thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it very much.
All right, everybody. Tomorrow, I'm going to go over, in addition to the general topic of the show, I'm going to go over all the things that I plan to do in 2015, books I'm going to release and projects I'm going to start or finish. And I hope it sounds reasonable after what I just told you guys in episode, 309, tomwoods.com/309, about being a workaholic. Because if I now tell you I'm going to do 500,000 things, kind of undercuts everything I was trying to tell you in that episode. But I do think I have things under control. I do think I have a reasonable array of projects, and I think you're going to be interested in some of them. So I'll talk about that tomorrow alongside the regular topic of the show. So thanks so much for listening, everybody. See you tomorrow.
The Tom Woods Show.